Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ILTA Professional Services Peer Group Leadership Podcast Series. I'm Jeff Fance. I'm a partner at McDermott Will & Emery, and I work in our Chicago office. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Shirley Crow, the Chief Information Officer at Ferrella, Braun & Martell, and the topic for this podcast is low-cost ideas to improve talent and morale. So thank you, Shirley, for being on today. Let's start with you giving the audience a little bit of background on how you ended up in your role, the CIO role, at Ferrella.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here. Let's see. I wound up at Ferrella in 2003 after the previous firm for which I'd been CIO dwindled from 150 lawyers to 30 and then merged with a much larger firm in 2001. Those weren't easy economic times either, but we certainly didn't foresee the kinds of changes that began in 2008 and now seem to be the new normal, as they say.
The new normal, yes. I think we are starting to get to know it well. And good for you for landing on your feet. Unfortunately, I think the new normal means that the entire law firm industry is trying to reduce their budgets to address that economic downturn we keep hearing and feeling. And at the same time, we have our corporate clients keep demanding for lower legal spend. So are you seeing that trend?
I certainly do. I see firms redistributing duties to existing staff when staff members depart, and I see significant and ongoing pressures to reduce costs. Clients are tending to decline automatic fee increases. They're looking for efficiency and alternatives to hourly billing and high value for their spend. At the same time, law firm partners have surprisingly little interest in their compensation being reduced. This makes for interesting times. It's especially interesting to see vendors acquire various products and increase the price, or to see high annual increases on software maintenance and subscriptions. We need the products to achieve technological efficiency, so we have to find other ways to cut costs. Unfortunately, one of the ways that firms have done that is by reducing professional staff headcount and by reducing rates of staff compensation increases.
Well, I think as a law firm partner myself, I must confess that my goal really is to keep my compensation the same or to increase as I become more senior. But I do see that conflict here. I mean, you're really being asked to do more with less in this new normal time. That's really got to be frustrating.
It is. I'm responsible for 5 departments. I'm fortunate to have built teamwork and camaraderie among all of them. I focus most of my day-to-day attention on the IT department, where I'm also fortunate to lead a terrific team of professionals who are committed to supporting each other in the firm. Still, we're stretched too thin, and that is clear. I try to make sure that IT members have the tools they need to do their jobs most effectively, but I could not say that we have the headcount to be as nimble as we would like in completing our projects or responding to new technologies that attorneys would like to use. The vetting, analysis, implementation, troubleshooting, and training all take time, and our plates are very full.
So Shirley, then what effect does that diminishing budget, without, of course, any diminishing expectations, what effect has that had on your ability to lead this team that has full plates?
Well, I try not to let these factors prevent me from being a good leader. I think open recognition of the circumstances is important, and to the extent the members of my team are not aware of the changes in the legal landscape, I'm forthright about that reality. I want to make sure I set the right expectations about what we face, and I think honesty goes a long way in earning trust and loyalty.
Are there things that you and your leadership team have done to improve morale in a low-cost way?
Absolutely. For me, it all starts with knowing the people. I get to know my team as individuals. I know what motivates them, their communication preferences, their work styles, and I care about them as individuals. I think that's a baseline for good morale. I'm flexible about accommodating special requests, such as permitting employees to work from home from time to time or to adjust schedules for special family needs. One of the most delightful opportunities I recently had to say yes was when 3 members of the IT department senior leadership team asked to take time on a weekday to go see Godzilla together. I also let team members know that I'm fallible and I'm open to their feedback about my performance. I ask them directly for coaching if I'm uncertain about the best course of action and I think they can help. I encourage them to give me feedback, and when they do, I listen and incorporate their advice if I can. I also try to tell them directly about weaknesses I have that may affect them. For example, I'm very capable of expecting others to follow the dots in my twisted mind because the connections are obvious to me, and I tend to fail to communicate my mind's path. My husband would testify to that as well. I believe all of my teams are aware of the need to call me out on this issue.
I think that's a great lesson to learn. I do think that the best leaders are also the best listeners. But you can have the happiest, greatest workplace in the world and go see movies periodically, and you still can't have success unless you have a talented workforce. Are the things that you've done to keep and improve talent without spending much money, and consistent with the topic here that we're trying to find low-cost ways of improving morale?
Yes, there are things that I do. I watch and learn, and this goes back to knowing the people. I watch and learn what interests people and what they're good at. I provide opportunities to let them do what they like and do well. I also try to put people in places they can succeed, even if it means taking away responsibilities for which they're not suited. That can be very difficult and awkward, but how fair is it to demand someone do well something he or she isn't capable of? I do not micromanage. If team members believe I'm going to second-guess and criticize every step they take, they will become paralyzed. I coach, I share ideas, I offer suggestions, but I make clear that while I'm responsible for setting direction and meeting firm goals, the final decision about how to achieve the desired results is up to the person accountable for them. I have learned to avoid being an obstacle. The leader isn't the doer. If she's too hands-on, she'll inhibit the team's ability to complete projects, as well as their opportunities for growth, development, and pride of ownership. Oh, but there is one place where I stay hands-on. We use an after-hours help desk provider, and I'm the first point of escalation, so I can do whatever I'm capable of, and that may be just talking someone off the ledge to avoid interrupting my team's time off. I think that's another small, inexpensive way to appreciate and retain talent and improve morale. I let team members know how much I appreciate their good work by giving praise, and when I feel it's appropriate and I can talk HR into agreeing, I give spot bonuses. I let the folks I work with know I'm invested in their success and in retaining them on the team. I also let them know that if they truly feel the time has come to move on, I'll help them any way I can.
There's something you said there. It is amazing how far a little bit of praise and appreciation can go. But I also know that a combination of recognition and putting your money where your mouth is could probably go even farther. But I'd imagine that it's probably pretty hard to convince an HR group to give you that opportunity to give spot bonuses. How do you become successful there?
Well, I agree with you that praise and appreciation go a long ways, especially when they're offered publicly in the appropriate forums. I also like to show appreciation tangibly. So when I approach HR, I try to be prepared with answers to the questions and objections I know I'll encounter. I talk about how the project benefited the firm, how the effort was above and beyond expectations, and how the person stepped up to an opportunity to stretch and grow. One question I know I'll often get asked is whether the person worked extra hours, late nights, or weekends to accomplish the work. I tend to answer that I think people who are exempt from overtime compensation are accountable for results more than time, and hey, we're encouraging efficiency, right? And last but not least, I always start by asking HR for more than I think I'll be able to get.
That's terrific advice in the split the baby world we live in, isn't it? Shirley, thank you very much. I think we're going to have to end on that note. We've reached the end of the podcast, but I do want to thank you, Shirley, for your time today. You've provided some great advice that should help a lot of people, and I wish you and the audience a terrific rest of the day.